Welcome to Counter Apologetics.
Welcome to Counter Apologetics. I'm your host, Emerson Green, and today we'll be discussing prayer studies. In spite of the progress of science and reason, the notion that prayer can change the real world has persisted into the 21st century. So we're going to take a look at two famous prayer studies in history, the first one ever conducted and the most scientifically rigorous one ever conducted, to see what science has to say about the power of prayer.
Do you think prayer works? Many people say, yes, absolutely, I think prayer works. And then you say, okay, well, you know, we have a new airline where the pilots are just going to rely on prayer to land the planes. Who's going to sign up for that airline? If the pilot comes over the PA system and tells you that he's convinced that prayer is all he needs to land this plane, you know, you're just going to see just stark terror on the faces of even the most religious people.
Francis Galton conducted the first scientific study of prayer in the late 19th century, and during that time, everyone in the Anglican Church prayed for the health and well-being of the royal family every Sunday. So he compared the health of the British royal families over the generations to the general population. He thought that if prayer works, you'd expect the people who were prayed for the most to maybe live a little longer or be a little fitter or healthier than the average person at that time, who did not have tens of thousands of people praying for them every week. But there was no significant difference in life expectancy, health, or well-being between the royal families and the general public. You might be tempted to say that prayer doesn't work that way, but am I really supposed to believe that God ignored the prayers of millions of people for hundreds of years because someday somebody in 1872 would conduct a study? Why is God going to such lengths to make sure that we don't get any evidence of prayer? We have no reason to doubt that large numbers of these people praying were sincere. I'm sure that many just went along with it out of tradition or respect, but I'm also sure that many people really did wish the royal family well and prayed sincerely for their health in the same way that my family and others pray for the president. And if God had some kind of plan and wasn't going to improve the royal family's health regardless of sincere prayer, then what's the point of praying in the first place? Moving up to present day, the study of the therapeutic effects of intercessory prayer was conducted by the Templeton Foundation on the effectiveness of prayer for patients recovering from coronary artery bypass graft surgery, which is to treat heart disease. The team was under the leadership of Harvard Medical School graduates Herbert Benson and Jeffrey A. Dusek, who were granted $2.4 million by the Templeton Foundation to test the efficacy of prayer. Dr. Benson was quoted in a press release as, "believing that the evidence for the efficacy of intercessory prayer in medical settings is mounting." The Templeton Foundation, by the way, is a religious organization that funds scientific research, among other things, that is intended to, quote, affirm life's spiritual dimension. Every year they award the Templeton Prize for progress towards research or discoveries about spiritual realities, so that should let you know where they're coming from. The experiment took 1,802 subjects who all generally believed that prayer works and divided them into three groups: patients who would be receiving prayers but didn't know it, patients who would be receiving prayers and were told about it, and the control group, patients who would not be receiving prayers. The experiment was double-blind. The patients were assigned at random to their group, and neither doctors, caregivers, patients, or experimenters knew who was in which group. The results, published in the American Heart Journal of April 2006, showed that there was no difference between the prayed-for group and the not-prayed-for group. There was no decrease in recovery time or complications whatsoever. There was, famously, an increase in complications for the group who was being prayed for and knew they were being prayed for. So, in the light of all this, which is more likely, that prayer doesn't work, or that prayer does work, but God never allows it to be verified objectively because he wants our primary source of evidence to be secondhand motivated anecdotes? Either God is going to absurdly elaborate lengths to make sure that the verifiable evidence shows that prayer doesn't work, or prayer just doesn't work. So Some believers respond to the unfavorable results by saying that they wouldn't expect prayer studies to work in the first place. First of all, I have a really hard time imagining that if the results were in favor of the efficacy of prayer, that they would have said the same thing. If secretly prayed for patients healed faster, but only when they received Christian prayer, that would count as good evidence. And if positive results would be evidence for Christianity, that means that negative results, the opposite, would count as evidence against Christianity. You can't have your cake and eat it too. If apologists want to claim that the consistent failure of prayer doesn't count as evidence against Christianity, then unanswered prayers from Poseidon or Allah don't count as evidence against them either. If empirical results don't decide what works in the real world and what doesn't, then all bets are off. Rejecting empiricism to try to protect your God from the consistent failure of prayer is clearly special pleading and opens the door to all kinds of absurdities.
You could have made precisely the same comment, simply changing a single word from God or a personal God to Poseidon, without any change in sense, really. You could say no scientific study has ruled out the existence of Poseidon. This analogy, which I'm now drawing between Poseidon and the personal Christian God or the Jewish God or the Muslim God, really strikes theists, Christians, Jews, and Muslims, as a total non sequitur. What you have on your side are sheer numbers of subscribers.
It's also worth pointing out that the vast majority of believers do think that prayer has a real-world effect. And they didn't get this belief because they're theologically unsophisticated. They get it, in part, from the Bible. There's story after story of prayer working and changing real-world events in the Old and New Testaments. And it's fairly clear that the Templeton Foundation thought that their study would affirm the efficacy of prayer. I'm pretty sure they didn't spend $2.4 million to prove that prayer doesn't work. Since we're making claims about what God would or wouldn't do when it comes to prayer, here are four quotes from Jesus on prayer and what we should expect of it. "Therefore I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours." Mark 11:24. "If you believe, you will receive whatever you ask for in prayer." Matthew 21:21. "You may ask me for anything in my name, and I will do it." John 14:14. "Again, I tell you that if two of you on earth agree about anything you ask for, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven." Matthew 18:19. The fact is that the Bible, as it usually is on the side of the fundamentalists. Jesus, who is God, clearly expects prayer to have a real causal force out in the world. People claim all the time that God made their cancer go into remission. But why does God only do things that could easily be explained naturalistically? It's well known that spontaneous remission occurs without much explanation all the time to atheists, Jews, Christians, Muslims, and Hindus. Why doesn't God heal amputees? If he'll make cancer go into remission, why wouldn't he regenerate a limb? Jesus is claimed to have regrown a man's ear in Luke 22, so we know that there's no principle that the Christian God has preventing him from regrowing limbs, so I guess he only wanted to do this when there were no video cameras around or other sources to verify the event. If naturalism is true, we wouldn't expect amputees to regrow limbs. We would expect the power of prayer to be entirely limited to the power of a placebo. We would expect prayer to do nothing more than to make the person praying feel better. On the other hand, if theism is true, and if the story in Luke is true, we would expect some amputees to be healed sometimes. We would also expect prayer to have an extra effect, beyond a placebo, at least some of the time. But scientific studies on intercessory prayer have demonstrated time and time again that the effect of prayer is non-existent. A theist might suggest that perhaps God picks and chooses special individual cases in which to intervene, but we don't need millions of cases, we just need a few. There's no reason we shouldn't be able to verify some of these instances, even if they're rare. Everyone has a high-definition video camera in their pocket. If limbs were being regrown, we would expect some objective documentation eventually. There are some stock answers that Christians offer when you ask them why prayer never seems to do anything, and here are a few of them.
Number one, God doesn't perform miracles today as he did in the past.
Why not? There's nothing I've read in the Bible that indicates to me that God had a time limit for his willingness to perform miracles. He did it in the past, like with Egypt's plagues, the parting of the Red Sea, or stopping the rotation of the earth. So why doesn't anything like that happen now? One possible explanation is that God has mysteriously gotten shy about performing miracles as technology like the internet and high-definition video cameras have advanced and proliferated. Another explanation might be that as soon as it was possible to document these events objectively, the stories tapered off because they were never happening in the first place and relied on the fact that objective documentation used to be a lot harder to come by.
Number two, how do you know God has never healed an amputee?
Because there's never been objective documentation or verification of that happening. All we have are second or third or fourth hand motivated anecdotes spread by word of mouth that are impossible to verify.
Number three, God's plan is not subject to your approval. God is God and you are not.
You've misunderstood what I'm saying if you think that I'm asking God to get my approval to do anything. I'm just wondering why prayer doesn't work, or if prayer does work, why there's no evidence for it. I'm pretty sure that God would know that email forwards from my religious relatives are not the most effective means to get the word out about his miracles.
Number four, you can't test God.
Well, yes I can. If God has an effect on the real world, then yes I can test God. Maybe I can't command God to do something, but again, I'm not telling God what to do. We can just wait for God to do his thing, and because everyone has video cameras in their pockets and the internet exists, we should have some decent evidence eventually. It's worth pointing out that in the Bible, Gideon puts his fleece in the grass to test God to get evidence and verification. And in Malachi, when it explicitly says to test God when it comes to tithing.
Number five, God does not have to say yes to every prayer. Sometimes the answer is no.
I don't need God to answer yes to every single prayer. I just need him to occasionally answer yes to something that only God could do and objective documentation that it happened. I've already mentioned this, but why has God gotten so shy after everyone got a video camera? I'm going to keep harping on this point about the advancement of technology, especially the fact that we all have cameras in our pockets, so I apologize for sounding like a broken record on that point. I'm not claiming that video footage is undeniable evidence, but it does carry a lot more weight than an eyewitness report of the same thing, especially an eyewitness report from someone who is biased and predisposed to believe. Even better than a video is contemporaneous video footage. If thousands of people take a video of the same event, along with corroborating physical evidence, then that's evidence worth considering. The more people who would have to be involved, the harder it would be to fake. How is prayer supposed to work? I'd actually like to get in the weeds a little bit on this point. So, in order for prayer to work, there has to be some kind of interaction between God and the natural world. How does this interaction occur? If God is this immaterial being outside of space and time, how does he affect material within space and time? He must enter into it somehow, or else there would be no effect.
Well, I don't think that science can, by definition, measure something that's not measurable. So something that's supernatural or outside of the natural world, if it's outside of space and time, we can't get at it. So at some point, your God has to dip into the space-time continuum and stir the particles, and then Sean should be able to measure it and say whether it's happening or not.
I'm also unsure of how we interact with God. How do our prayers reach God, for example? How does the message get from my mind to God's mind? How does the information in your brain leave your brain and get to God? And am I really supposed to believe that I can telepathically communicate with a disembodied mind? Let's use a specific example. I pray in the aftermath of some kind of disaster, whether it's a natural disaster or a mass shooting or what have you. What is the process? Step one would have to be that I telepathically communicate my desires to the omnipotent, disembodied mind that lives somewhere. Step two would be the disembodied mind, having received my mental transmission, decides in this case to act and uses his divine immaterial appendage to move around some atoms in the natural world, influencing the outcome of something and thus answering my prayer. That process might sound ridiculous, but it's not inaccurate. Maybe I'm using words you don't like, but I would challenge you to object to any part of that process in a non-semantic way. But there's a big problem that we sort of glazed over, which is the interaction problem. This isn't a new objection. This was being brought up to Descartes when he was developing his theory of mind-body dualism, as he was claiming that the mind was made of an entirely different substance than the body. How would these two entirely different substances communicate with each other? How could a purely thinking substance, like the Cartesian soul, determine the movements of a physical, material body? As time has gone on, the interaction problem has only gotten harder and been further complicated because now we have an extremely detailed understanding of the particles of which we are made and the laws that govern them, at least the laws and particles compromising our everyday lives. Some other unknown stuff interacting with the atoms in your body, like whatever a soul is made of, would actually mean that the laws of physics are wrong or really incomplete, and somehow we've missed that while managing to send people to the moon and satellites into orbit using these laws of physics and while building other fields of science that are contingent on our understanding of physics, like chemistry and biology, without ever discovering anything that contradicts these laws. I'm not a physicist, so I'll let Sean Carroll explain in detail. It's a little bit of a longer clip, but this really is a profound concept that's worth grasping and also has implications way beyond our discussion of prayer.
But really, quantum field theory is the most successful theory we have in all of science. It has been the most precisely tested. There's absolutely no evidence that it is in any way incorrect, and it has incredible implications for how we think about the world. We don't need to know the theory of grand unification or quantum gravity to know that we understand the everyday world in which we live. We have a theory of the everyday world that is completely successful. Everything in this room consists of three particles arranged in different combinations: electrons, protons, and neutrons. And those particles are interacting with three forces: the nuclear force that holds the protons and neutrons together, the electromagnetic force, and the gravitational force that holds us down to the Earth. There is nothing else that we need or will ever need, even a million years from now, to understand what is going on in this room right now. Now, there are other particles of nature not in the standard model. There is dark matter, for example, but dark matter doesn't interact very strongly with us. There are probably literally millions of dark matter particles passing through your body every second. If there were new particles that interacted in any substantial way with us, we would have produced them already, and we have not. For astronomers and physicists, other particles are relevant, but for you, what are you made of? What do you consist of? What are you really? You are electrons, protons, and neutrons interacting through gravity, the nuclear force, and electromagnetism. We don't understand the Big Bang. We don't understand dark matter. We don't understand quantum gravity, grand unification, many, many things. However, the knowledge we have of quantum field theory ensures that none of those things is relevant to what's going on in this room right now. We don't need to understand them to understand how human beings work as physical systems.
If atheists are right that prayer doesn't work, then there are some hard truths that believers, casual or devout, need to come to grips with. If there is no theistic God and prayer is a man-made invention, prayer really is nothing but wishing really hard. Prayer is magic. In fact, prayer and magic have equal rates of success when it comes to solving problems. You might as well say, "May the force be with you," or cast spells with a magic wand, and it would be just as effective as praying in the wake of a mass shooting. Another thing to consider is that if you would rather pray than take real action, you will be increasingly excluded from the conversation as time goes on. You will gradually lose your place at the adult's table when problems arise. Also, if you choose to ignore the arguments and scientific evidence that prayer doesn't work, you're enabling people to believe that wishing really hard in their heads counts as helping. Prayer doesn't count as doing something, and you're doing real damage by siphoning off people who could actually help. If you're praying, that means that you want to help, and that's noble. But what isn't is that you're pushing responsibility to do something off of yourself and onto God. That way you don't have to work, think, or volunteer your time or donate your money. You're only helping yourself by easing your conscience. The only thing prayer does is make you feel better. There is no help coming from heaven, so we have to solve our own problems.
Baby, 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 baby,
Those are all the counter-apologetics I have for you today. I have two new patrons this week, Sam Hall and Sohan D'Souza, both higher-level patrons again this week. Thank you guys so much for your generosity. You have no idea how much I appreciate it. And you can support the show on a per-episode basis at patreon.com/counter, where you can earn early access to every episode in addition to many other benefits. If you don't have the money to support on Patreon, but you still want to make God cry, you can like us on our social media or leave a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you found this podcast. Our theme music was written and performed by the band Wailers. The song is called Magic Tricks and was used with permission. Thank you for joining me today. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll see you next time we meet to counter apologetics. And in Malachi, when it explicitly says to test God when it comes to tithing. What a coincidence. That's the one place where it's okay, giving money to your pastor.